Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well, getting close to wrapping up the week. I'm headed to Tallahassee this weekend to see my brother.
Oh, so you're being punished for something?
I am. Yeah, we don't get along too well. I don't care much for him. He's younger, better looking, and makes more money. But the cousins really enjoy each other, so I got to drive down there Friday night.
That's
so.
Right. This is the last hurrah of the summer for your kids?
Exactly. And you know how the kids are at selling things. They always have we should have them here selling sponsorships and shows.
Exactly. We'll work on that.
So what are you going to do this weekend? I know you'll discover a new restaurant and watch a new movie. Do you do it every weekend?
No, this weekend I'm doing some work with the Dr. Fitness Show. We're having our semi-annual marketing meeting. And let's see, that's my highlight. Maybe I'll go to a movie. What's out? Anything out?
I have no idea. I rent off the AT&T thingy.
You know, we'll watch the Olympics. You going to watch the Olympics? Or
no,
you're done with that? Yeah, the Olympic fatigue?
I am consciously not watching the Olympics because I can watch any time I want because I got the DVR thingy.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. I had to ask you this morning if the guy won any swim events yet.
I know, yesterday was a weird day for Olympic watchers because it seemed like there weren't many Americans in events. So we were watching a lot of the other countries play.
Well, my youngest is a gymnast, and so have been watching the gymnastics, and I like the little, Gabby. She's all teeth.
Right. They're amazing.
She's going to make a ton of money because the endorsement she's going to get for all kinds of products. She's very marketable.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm excited about today's show.
Yeah, we've got a studio full, and this is going to be a lot of fun. A little bit later in the program, we are going to visit with Michael Mogul, who we met at that rock concert that we did the remote broadcast at. It was fun doing the mic check because I knew he was going to be great because I knew he was going to have a good, clear voice. We're also going to hear from Bill Ramsey, who knows a thing or two about doing business internationally and particularly in China. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the executive director for Venture Atlanta, Miss Allison Eamon. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Venture Atlanta, I believe that we also saw a booth at some remote broadcast that we did. I don't know if it was at Sweetwater Brewery Company, a tag,
maybe
both.
It was, yep, at the TechCrunch meetup, it was.
But I don't know that you and I had a chance to meet
personally.
We got connected. We do a lot of connecting around here, Lee. We got connected because I had a chance to visit with a small group over at Metro Atlanta Chamber and met with Nancy Watley.
Yep, she's a great lady.
And, we weren't 15 minutes into the conversation. She said, you got to meet this Allison lady. So here we are.
And I think that all happened like 4 days ago.
Yeah, so. I know, man. Hey, Nancy doesn't mess around, man. She produces better results in less time. We got to get her on a High Velocity show.
That's right. Right? Now, you want to share a little bit about what you guys are up to at Venture Atlanta?
Sure. Well, Venture Atlanta is a great event. It's basically October 17th and 18th. It's a technology event that helps entrepreneurs connect with sources of capital. So, you know, you've got all these great entrepreneurs out here, great ideas in Georgia. We work with Georgia Tech and Emory and, you know, students coming out of all those places, and they need capital. They need some money to get them going. So we provide the forum for them to get on stage, give their 6-minute pitch, and talk to investors from across the country. And we are the only forum that actually brings in investors from everywhere. I mean, we've had them from Canada, from London, from, haven't had any from Hong Kong or China, but we have had, I think some have come from Dubai and from India. But basically, the event is at the Georgia Aquarium. And last year, we had almost 700 people there. And it's really kind of a who's who networking event. So there's, you know, your technology executives, people from Oracle and Turner and Cisco and HP. And then you've got the entrepreneur with the next great idea who is walking around with their napkin going, hey, what about this? What about this? And then you've got the companies that are a little more established that are definitely ready for money. And they get on stage and they give 6-minute pitches. And hopefully there's a great venture capitalist or angel investor or investment banker in the audience that wants to write them a big check.
Now, in the event, is there an opportunity for the investors to ask them questions, or they just do 6 minutes of kind of a here's what we're about kind of thing, and then the investor follows up with them like later on in the day?
Yes, that's exactly how it works. It is not a live Q&A.
Now, is this event the big event that you guys work on all year long, or do you do things throughout the year as well?
Interesting that you said that. Basically, you know, Venture Atlanta started 6 years ago as a coming together of, you know, speaking of the Metro Atlanta Chamber, the Technology Association of Georgia, and the Atlanta CEO Council. So those three groups said, you know, there's these events in North Carolina and Boston and New York and Silicon Valley and all over the place. And here we have Atlanta, who's a great technology center. We got Georgia Tech at the hub. You know, we have one of the biggest and best incubators, ATDC, that's been on, you know, Forbes and everything like that. And we don't have any kind of big, you know, venture event. So the three of them actually came together and said, you know, let's put on this event. And they hired me to run it. And it's pretty cool. In my interview, it was, you know, them showing me, hey, we have a logo and this cool idea. You go build it.
Because these are startup people. They need to bring you a napkin. It was a napkin with a logo.
Yeah, it was literally. And I was a little stressed. But, you know, I came from the mortgage industry. So this was all completely new to me. I didn't even know what venture capital was. So very exciting. But anyway, we put on, you know, this great event, but it has really continues to transpire and to get bigger. So, you know, originally there was 20 companies on stage, 300 or 400 people. Now we put 40 companies on stage. We continue to grow the conference. And, you know, you were saying, is this what we do all year? This takes a lot of time. You know, basically I'm the one doing the sponsorships and the programming and getting keynote speakers. And, you know, we have Steve Case opening our conference this year, which is exciting. But we hope to continue to have smaller events throughout the year. So we want to continue to grow and expand and support our entrepreneurs year-round.
Now, how do you choose the 40 companies that get to be on stage? That must be fun. Is it like a Survivor, American Idol?
It is actually a pretty interesting selection process. So the first year we did it, I remember we had these conference calls, and I sat on the phone, and I didn't know what the heck everyone was talking about. And now I've gotten a little more educated. And basically what we do is we have the companies go online and they submit a two-page executive summary.
Right.
And we put a template together for them and then they fill out an application. And I got to tell you, it's like 7 questions. I mean, pretty simple. And it's free. It's free for them to apply. And if they're selected, it's actually free for them to present. So it's a very entrepreneur-centric thing. But we have a selection committee of about 30 people and it's lawyers, accountants, investment bankers, venture capitalists, and CEOs, you know, people that have raised money and been there and done it, entrepreneurs. And basically they vet all the deals. So they look at all the executive summaries and we have an online grading system. So we rank everybody. It's kind of techno. It's pretty cool. Mm. So we rate everybody and then we pick the best ones that should be on stage.
But that's all done internally amongst your people. Like it's not, the public doesn't vote.
No.
It's in the back room with the chips.
No voting. That would kind of be a nightmare. I mean, basically the whole thing is we're looking at what deals are venture capitalists and angels want to invest in. You know, I mean, you know, I have to tell you guys a funny story. The other day, I had this entrepreneur call me, and this is a true story, and I'm only saying it because it was too funny. This guy calls me, and he says, I put in my application, and I'm thinking I should withdraw it. And I said, well, sir, why should you withdraw it? And he said, because by next week, I'm going to be worth $120 billion. I said, really? I said, so maybe you don't need my conference. And then he said, and I'm going to be the first trillionaire in the world. First trillionaire in the world. This guy submitted we asked for a 2-page executive summary. He submitted a 100-page document. So a little bit of a maybe eccentric whack job. I mean, I got off the phone and told my kids and they were like, what, mom? So there's all sorts of people out there, but I just thought that was so funny. But the so we get all sorts of people and we really try to we usually get a couple hundred applications. Last year we got about 200 that we had to vet down to 40. And I'll tell you guys what's the most frustrating, and anyone listening, help me out here. The deadline to apply is August 15th, so 2 weeks. We get 100 applications the last day. And not only the last day, I get the entrepreneurs at 5 o'clock telling me what's really the deadline.
The drop dead deadline. Right?
And I tell them, I'm like, I'm going to sleep about 11. When I wake up at 7, I'm closing it. So you got till 7 in the morning. Okay.
Okay.
And it's online, so you can't like do the scented paper routine, right?
Yeah.
Can't
so,
FedEx it.
You know, but you know what? I got to tell you, I mean, if you, we open the applications in May, and if you wait till 6 o'clock the day of, come on. I mean, you know, it's, you've had time, so.
Are you part of the selection process at this point, since you've been around for a while?
I sit and kind of facilitate everything, but I don't actually vote. I leave that up to the experts. So, you know, I have a marketing background and I've gotten to the point where if in my 2 sentences of reading your summary, I have no clue what you're doing, maybe you're not telling your story right, but I don't have enough expertise to see what, people are going to put money.
So there's never been anyone that you really liked and they didn't pick and you thought they were
crazy?
Oh,
yeah, there was. There was. There has been.
She let them in the back door.
You know, there's some neat people. I mean, you know, there's a young lady that applied this year, and, you know, I've seen her present at some different events in town, some smaller things, and she's just a fireball, and I think she'd be great. And, you know, so I have to say,
so you're rooting for her.
Yeah, there are some people I kind of root for.
Well, I know you're being modest, at least to some extent. You've been living in this world long enough that you really do have some counsel that you can offer startup folks. And so I'd like to help them a little bit, if we could. What are some just common mistakes that you see them all the time, every day, you roll your eyes and they go, oh, here goes another one, that might, you know, save some of us that don't know what we're doing in this regard. Like, whatever you do, do this. Whatever you do, don't do this.
Don't say you'll be a trillionaire.
Right, exactly. That's number one. You know what? I think you have to be realistic and reasonable, and you have to make sure, you know, they'll tell you, the first thing they'll tell you is, what problem are you solving? You know, who's out there? What problem are you solving? And one of the things that I've heard too many times is entrepreneurs say, no one else out there is doing this. I have no competition. And, you know, to the contrary, the venture capitalists would rather hear you have competition. You know, they'd rather hear that there's someone else doing it, that there's a proven market, you know, and not to say that there should never be anything new. I mean, don't get me wrong. But I think you have to be realistic. You have to be realistic in realizing that you're not going to be a trillionaire next week. You have to realize it's going to take time, and that you could have to revamp your business model 15 times. You know, David Cummings is a very successful entrepreneur here in town. He's run Hannon Hill and Pardot and some great companies. And I went to an event where he told the story of how many times he failed, you know, and I think understanding that, you know, everyone's not going to be the next Steve Jobs, and they're not going to be the next Bill Gates discovering Microsoft or Mark Zuckerberg, you know. So, I mean, they need to, you know, be realistic in their expectations. And I think you also have to know that there's so many people in this town that'll help you. You know, there's some, I mean, I know, Stone, you guys have been at Startup Lounge, and I don't know if you've been there yourself, but Mike Blake, Mike Blake, great guy in town who, you know, who I've worked with as well. So, you know, Mike Blake and Scott Burkett years ago said, we're just going to start this Startup Lounge thing. And they did it on their own. And it was very, you know, again, to help entrepreneurs. There's, you know, programs in town right now. TAG is running a program called Cap Venture. And it's, you know, you pay for it, but it's an education program, and they bring in, they bring in experts to help you. And I think the whole thing is realize that it's okay to ask for help. And, you know, and again, you know, every single entrepreneur puts together their projections and has that hockey stick. I mean, again, this is after my 6 years. I didn't know the hockey stick before, but has, you know, the projections. And, you know, ask the CPA for what's a realistic expectation. I mean, what can I expect? And, you know, everyone has the next mobile app and the next, you know, website that they offer this freemium model at. And, you know, I've gotten to the point where I ask entrepreneurs all the time, how are you going to make money? How are you going to make money? And I think that's, you know, a big thing that, and again, this is like so funny because years ago I couldn't have said any of this, but it's amazing if you really just sit down and talk to them and help them. I actually have an entrepreneur right now that I need to call back that, you know, she was like, my husband and I have this idea and we just don't know where to start. And sometimes they don't know where to start.
Right. But being willing to say, we don't know where to start.
That's a good start.
That's a good start, right? You know, they're gonna,
it is. It really is. And the thing is that, you know, whereas I want, you know, 500 people to apply for Venture Atlanta, I do not encourage every person to apply if I don't think it's the right thing for them. You know, I mean, you know, this company, you know, she said, we've got our idea, you know, we've got a website, we've got this, but we have no customers, no traction, no revenue, no nothing. And I was like, well, you're not going to get picked. I mean, you know, but
maybe it's a little early.
But, you know, what I will tell you guys is, you know, what I have heard is you just want to be in that room. And again, that room is, you know, executives from huge companies here in town who maybe are buyers of your product and buyers of your company. They're venture capitalists. They're, you know, John Yates from Morris Manning, who knows everyone in town. They're Jeff Levitt from DLA Piper, who knows everyone in town, you know, who can really connect them and help them with their business. I mean, you know, there's a great lady who was my first sponsorship call, and her name's Susan O'Dwyer, and she's at Haba Farragetti and Wynn. And, you know, she basically just, she kind of mentored me and helped me and walked me around. And you really need someone to help you as well. You know, you need those mentors, and there's tons of great serial entrepreneurs here in town that are willing to help.
Now, are there any kind of restrictions regarding the companies that pitch? Like, are they a biotech? Are they only technology?
That's a great question, Lee. They're actually only technology. So, you know, bio, life sciences, pharma, med devices, we leave to the experts. So Georgia Bio is a group here in town, and SEMDA, the Southeastern Medical Device Association. So we're looking for fintech deals and information security and health IT and really things that Atlanta is touting as their expertise,
sweet spot, right?
Their sweet spot, exactly.
So. No radio networks. We won't let you within 500 feet of the building.
And also, just to that point, also only companies in Georgia. So you must be headquartered here in Georgia.
Even though the investors can come from wherever.
Yes. Yes.
So walk us through the conference experience, if you will, maybe from a couple of different perspectives, from an investor perspective
or and a sponsor.
From, or a sponsor perspective. Walk us through what we could expect in that role throughout the day.
So, you know, basically sponsorships. We are, Venture Atlanta's a 501c6 nonprofit, so we can only put on this event through sponsorship supports. We've gotten wonderful sponsorships over the last several years. Actually, this year we've sold the most we've ever had, so that's exciting. So basically, sponsors have realized that it's something, you know, to support. So as a sponsor, you're there to find companies, you know, to find prospects, to find people to work with. You know, so let's take the example of, you know, a law firm. A law firm's there to, you know, get the investor to work with them so that they can put their deals together. And then the law firm is there to work with the entrepreneur because they want to help them write their patents and,
right,
you know, do everything
and
to
get
help
in early.
Yeah,
right?
And get in
early.
And it's very interesting. There's a lot of law firms here in town that, you know, they know the early stage companies may not have the money, you know, that's you know, Vitru, who just got purchased by Oracle, might have. But what they try to do is get in early and maybe give them a deal, you know, maybe help them out a little bit on the pricing and help them a little bit. There's some boutique law firms in town that, you know, specifically specialize on, you know, working with some earlier stage companies. And then, you know, the investor comes to town for a couple purposes. One, they come to find companies. So they're coming looking for companies, but they're also there to network. They're there to see their peers. They're there to, you know, kick back, have a few beers at the big, you know, dinner we have at night. You know, there's a conference in town, not in town, out of town in Florida. And that conference, they all go to play golf, you know, because they have it in Naples and Orlando. And, well, I can't compete with that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but we do have our event at the Georgia Aquarium. And it's very interesting because the investors love it there. And this year, we actually have a big private dinner at the World of Coke. So we're kind of showcasing Georgia this year. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And every year, we try to move from the Georgia Aquarium because we're getting too big for it. And they don't want us to move.
Well,
it's a dramatic setting. I mean, we did a remote at the Women in Technology event. Mm-hmm. WITConnect.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And you know, we have that backdrop of that aquarium.
What were those
stunning
big white?
The belugas. So
the belugas are going by.
Well, that was distracting,
awesome,
but fun. It was cool.
But you know what? You can't be in a bad mood.
Right.
You cannot. I mean, we basically, the way we set up our conference is that back area where the belugas are is where all the companies are set up with tables.
Right.
So, you know, you got your breakfast set up or coffee or snacks or whatever, and you're sitting there chatting with an entrepreneur and there's the beluga swimming around and it's like, how can you be in a bad mood?
Right.
You know?
So what do you guys need right now? You're looking for sponsors because this thing's going to happen when, in October?
Yeah. It happens in October. Sponsorships, I will say we're pretty good. I mean, certainly I'm not going to turn anyone away though. Let me tell you, I could always do better. What we're looking for now is we want investors to come in from across the country and we want companies to apply. So we want, you know, like I said, we've got an application online. It's ventureatlanta.org and, the application's open through August 15th and, you know, I know there's lots of groups around town, around the country that you know, that's really not the deadline. It's our deadline. I will tell you guys, I do not extend. So, you know, we expect you to get it in. We already have several applications, so we definitely are getting them in. And the word's kind of crinkling out that maybe it needs to be in earlier this year. So that's good. But
and money gets raised here, just so everybody's clear,
yes,
that this is not an event that's just like kind of a, hey, let's do this event to practice. This is where deals get done.
No, this is a real deal.
Yeah. Well, and that's a great point. You know, Venture Atlanta, before Venture Atlanta, there was another small conference here in town that the Atlanta CEO Council ran. And, you know, we kind of merged in with them. And if you date back to 2002, when they had that conference, companies who have presented at these venture conferences in Georgia have raised almost $1 billion. So we're at $975 million. So
you know you're crossing that threshold this year.
It's still short of a trillion, though. Yeah, let's don't get carried away here.
Well, when that guy comes next year, they'll hit the trillion.
But what's really cool is that, you know, we got a great success story. We've had several success stories, but, you know, one that just came out of our conference last week was a guy that was looking for a follow-on round, which is called a Series B round, a venture round. And he met an investor at Venture Atlanta, and the investor wanted to lead the round, and the guy raised $7 million for his company. And, you know, he sent me a note, and he goes, just want to thank you guys. Just want to let you know I raised my $7 million, and it came directly from Venture Atlanta. So obviously, you know, we're doing some good stuff. The companies that, that presented a couple months ago, I think they've raised over $30 million in the last couple months. So
wow. So now if a company does go in there and they, you know, trying to get investment dollars, how do the event's over? Is there more follow up? Do you guys help in that regard, or they're kind of on their own?
You know what? They're kind of on their own, but honestly, we need to do a better job helping them with the follow up. And that's something, you know, one of the things that we're doing this year is a little more facilitating on the front end, you know, trying to kind of make some more matches.
A little matchmaking.
Yeah, doing some more connecting. We do surveys after the conference. And one of the things that the investor said is, hey, you know, we'd really like some more one on one time with our companies, and the companies said the same thing, you know. So this year we're doing a private breakfast, you know, and we're going to do some facilitations and some, you know, almost like sign up to meet this company in advance. And, you know, afterwards, you know, it's really up to them. We can't tell the investor to call this company or, you know, what they need to do. But, you know, I work with the companies year round. I try to stay in touch with them. We had a great crop last year. I mean, they were just a great group. I heard so many good stories. I was at a ATDC showcase event, and a lady who presented this year, she's standing behind me, and we didn't know we were, you know, back to back. And she's telling a story to an entrepreneur about why they should apply to Venture Atlanta. And I turn around, I was like, wow, how great is that?
Where was my recorder?
Exactly. And she didn't know I was standing there. So can't get any better than that.
But we've done the Startup Lounge and Startup Riot events where they kind of have like, well, Startup Riot has the trade show boothy kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Have you done anything like that?
Yes, we do that as well. Every single company gets a table set up.
Oh, so there is an opportunity for the investors to kind of mill around and see the people and have a substantive conversation before or after their presentation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, that's what I'm talking about. So you've got, you know, Startup Lounge and Startup Riot and all these great things happening in town. So there's so many good avenues for entrepreneurs. And, you know, we do offer entrepreneurs discounts to come to the conference. You know, and just you're asking what we need. We also need people to register to attend. You know, we want to have.
Oh, so you can be an attendee just to kind of walk around and observe the whole.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, you definitely can. And, you know, interestingly, a couple years ago, we barely, you know, we didn't have that many entrepreneurs there if they weren't on stage presenting.
Right.
And that's what I was kind of saying. Now the entrepreneurs realize they just need to be in the room kind of taking it all in, you know, and being there to network. And trust me, there's people that walk around with their business plans going, here you go, here you go.
They're ambushing the event.
But it's like, you know, it's a completely open conference. So anyone can attend. Anyone can come in. Like I said, the only caveat for the applications is you must be a Georgia headquartered company.
Well, before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners have your coordinates, your contact information, and wherever they can go to learn more about the conference, apply, sign up, and that kind of thing.
All right. Well, I'm Allison Eamon. I'm the executive director, and more than happy to answer any questions. You could reach me at aeamon@ventureatlanta.org, or you can even call me, 770-298-4202. And our website is ventureatlanta.org. And we actually just did a little re-release yesterday. And so, you know, it's pretty easy to find the application, the registration information, anything you need. And I'm more than happy to talk to anyone about the event.
Yeah, and we'll make sure we put the link on our website. And maybe we'll do a nationally distributed press release for this show.
Well, I think we should, and it's October. I'll tell you what I'd like to explore, and maybe we can get some time after the show or down the road, is maybe between now and October, maybe have you come back with a sponsor or an investor here locally, and we'll just talk about it from there.
Yeah,
that'd be a cool show, don't you
think? Yeah, we could do a show just on the Venture Atlanta.
So
well, wow.
That'd be a lot of fun. So, well, what a delight to have you coming
Thank
in
you.
And looking forward to continuing the conversation. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I would love to. I have to say one thing, Lee. We have to see if we're related because my maiden name is Cantor, spelled like that.
With a K?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
you just threw that out there at the last minute. Like, I would have led. That's burying the lead. I hope you learned that in college, Allison.
Well, you know where she went, so
I know.
Not likely.
Thank you for having me. And thrilled to stay around.
Terrific. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio is a gentleman, another gentleman that Nancy Whatley and that crowd put us together with.
She's a good booker for us.
This was at my big time keynote address last week, Lee, so where they gave me like 7 minutes to brag about you.
We're calling it a keynote now?
Well, yeah. There'll be a book to follow the whole bit. But no, I got a chance through Jim Beach, who also does quite a bit of work with startups and has a book out on School for Startups, and we've gotten to know really well. Jim invited us to come in and talk a little bit about using this platform to grow your business. And I don't know, we must have had 20, 25 folks there.
Right.
And I got a chance to talk with them. And one of the gentlemen there, one of the very first gentlemen that I had an opportunity to visit with individually, is this man with China Business Consulting. Welcome to the show, Bill Ramsey.
Well, good morning. It's nice to be with you.
Well, we are delighted to have you, man. What compelled you to participate in that series at the Chamber? And what are you guys out there trying to do for folks with China Business Consulting?
Thank you. It is one of those things where I joined the Metro Chamber last year, in part because I had approached the mayor's office about doing business and cultural training for his trip to China. And so I met with Noel Downer in the mayor's office and Bill Cronin with Invest in Atlanta and made a proposal, and my company was accepted. And it just seemed like if I'm going to be making a presentation to the delegation going over to China on business and cultural training, I needed to be a member of the Metro Chamber. I've been very delighted to see some of the programs that they have offered and felt like it would be interesting to participate in. And this particular program they ran on the use of media. That's how it all got started.
So just to demonstrate that I really was listening when Allison was talking, what problem are you solving?
And how does it make money?
How does it make money? We'll start with what problem are you solving?
Well, when I started a couple of years ago thinking about what I was going to do after retiring from Troutman Sanders, where I'd been for 20-plus years, I you know, looked at my affinity for Asia. In 1973, I was stationed in Japan for 2.5 years, traveled in the region, and went to Hong Kong for the first time in 1973 and fell in love with the people and the city. So it was kind of nice in 1997 when Troutman started looking at opening an office in Hong Kong and went over and did due diligence and opened an office in record time, just before the handover in 1997, and later we opened an office in Shanghai in 2007. So I've had a lot of time to build up some really wonderful connections over there that I wanted to maintain, and after doing research, found that the small to mid-sized business market space and particularly sole proprietors really didn't have a lot of choices when it came to finding people that were willing to work with them on figuring out if doing business in China made sense for them. And so that's how this all got started, which was doing something in a region that I really enjoyed and wanted to maintain connections with. And people I talked to said, well, if you want to, you know, follow through on this idea, rather than waiting till you retire, you ought to do it now. And so...
So you took the plunge?
I took the plunge. I retired, announced that I was retiring from Troutman in January of last year and formed China Business Consulting, and here I am today.
Now, when you're working with your clients, are they people that are saying, hey, you know, I'm thinking of manufacturing something over there, can you help me kind of do that? Or is it, I want to open an office there and I want to sell stuff to the Chinese? Or is it both?
It's been interesting in that regard. While I have had conversations with a number of people that think they may want to consider doing manufacturing in China, in some cases, I've advised them that there are some steps they need to take first before doing that, and some are still in the process of thinking things through and are planning to get back with me. But the other pieces of business that, you know, are really kind of surprising. It's varied from a technology company that serves clients in the U.S. and the U.K. They provide help desk support in a particular industry, and a number of their clients have offices in Asia, particularly in China. And so I help them establish a branch office in Hong Kong to serve those clients and hopefully grow more business in that region. I have another client in Knoxville, Tennessee, who sells a very unique, one-of-a-kind item. It can be a somewhat high-end item, who wants to grow in the market and finding dealers to sell his product to over there. And we've been working on that. There was a company based here in Atlanta that's building a lab in southern China, decided that their key executives would benefit from having some business and cultural training, and the executive that's going over to China for the startup and the build-out of the laboratory, we've arranged for him to get Mandarin lessons before he goes over. So it's been a...
It's a wide variety. It's not... I mean, covering a big area there.
Right. And in many respects, it's kind of fun on helping people try to get into the China market and doing business there.
You said cultural training. That's purely hypothetical. But what kind of mistakes would a redneck from Marietta with a $2 or $3 million firm make if he were to go into China and try to get some real business done if he didn't take advantage of your counsel? Purely hypothetical.
Purely hypothetical. There are lots of things that you could do that would be very different from how we do business here in the U.S. One thing is, you've met with somebody, you're leaving, you go to pat them on the back because you've had a good conversation with
right.
them. And China is not a touchy-feely cultural. That's a no-no. And you sort of wait for the other person to stick out their hand, to shake before you do. You may have a meeting with someone that you're wanting to do business with, and they invite you to have drinks that evening. Well, you may have other things planned, and you turn it down. However, if somebody in China offers, to meet with you for drinks after work, you change your plans and you do that because that means they want to get to know you. Not necessarily talk about business, but get to know you so that improves your likelihood of being able to do business with them. So that's just a couple of examples of how we do things here and do things there is different.
Do you help the Chinese do business here, or it's all doing people in America doing business in China?
My focus at this point has really been going from the U.S. to China. I think everybody would like to sort of capture that market of inbound business from China, but it's a very difficult market to understand because the opportunities can come from so many different places that it really becomes sort of a word-of-mouth thing on how well you are known in the Chinese community and really getting referral-type
right.
work.
Now, do I have to be of a certain size to even think about doing this? Is this only for big companies, or is there a way, what would you say that my size has to be in order to kind of take this on?
I'm working with companies from sales of a little over $1 million to multiple $1 million. And that's why, China just isn't for, large companies. There are opportunities. And, things have changed rather dramatically. It's not the China that we grew up knowing about. Just a couple of examples. China is the third largest buyer of U.S. exports behind Canada and Mexico. Georgia is number two trading partner is China. But China's purchase of U.S. goods since 2000 has gone up 542%, while the U.S.'s trade with other countries has only gone up 80% during that same time period.
Is that because Chinese have now more disposable income?
Well,
there's so many of them.
Well, this is you know, buying U.S.
goods. If every one of them bought a whistle, I mean, you're a trillionaire. Yeah. That's probably your guy's plan.
Right. And so it's not, which is truly dramatic. I don't think a lot of people would guess that number. The other side of that coin is that our imports from China have also gone up since the trade deficit is still there.
Right.
But our growth in exports to China is dramatically higher than our trade with the rest of the world.
Now, is there you keep saying China, and China's a big country with lots of people and lots of regions. When you attack this from our side, do you attack it in kind of this in a singular way, or is there a different strategy like there would be here? Like if I'm selling something to California, I might not sell it in the same way I'm selling it to Mississippi.
Yes, there is a common sort of misconception that China is China and you can go in and use your business model here in China and
just like plug and play.
It doesn't typically work, and you will find that it even varies from province to province, and local cultures across the country. So you do have to have a very good understanding of local economies, local buying patterns, in figuring out how to best sell your product in that particular area. But it will vary.
So how concerned should one be about intellectual property things,
or
copyright infringement?
Is that a myth?
Historically, it certainly hasn't been a myth. But China has recognized that they've got to do a better job of enforcing trademark rights, and that is something that is slowly changing. They aren't, where we are, say in this country, but they are improving. They realize if they need and want to get high technology companies or research and development in key industries that they want to support the growth in, then they've got to do a better job of protecting a company's intellectual property that goes into the country to do business with them.
So how are you getting your clients? Because it seems like if I get 20 minutes for a substantive conversation like this, then I get it. This Bill guy, he's got something going on. He knows a lot of stuff. If I'm thinking about going to China, I'm going to get with Bill. But it's got to be a little bit of a challenge marketing your services. How do you do that?
That has been interesting, but it's finding speaking opportunities, starting to blog, and just getting out with people and meeting, and it's it's word of mouth.
And now Allison, so game over.
Yeah, forget about it.
And getting on the radio, how good is this?
But no, I mean, I'm sure there are other people in your space, and I'm sure it's not the easiest that you can't pick up the phone, right? And then they say, well, where have you been all my life? Come on over for lunch, right?
Well, in some cases,
sometimes.
I would do that. But one of the gratifying things about starting up the business was I thought it was going to be just me and Gene Hanratty. And as I was able to talk about what I was trying to do, some other really talented friends decided that they were willing to risk their sterling reputations having their names associated with my startup, business. I was just delighted to have them on board because it does add to the level of expertise and knowledge that can be found under one roof. In helping small businesses. And the other interesting part of that was all of the folks that have joined with me, a couple had thought about starting a business doing something similar to what I was doing and heard about what I was doing and said, you know, rather than us doing it, we'd like to talk to you about joining you. So everybody agrees that this the small to mid-sized business market is underserved.
And there's opportunity there for the business person who may not even be thinking there's opportunity there. Is that right?
In many cases, I think that's, you know, I think that's true. And as the companies I'm working with shows, you know, it can be a very small company that has opportunities for selling into into China.
Are you targeting just Georgia companies right now or Atlanta because you're here and your people are here, or you're open to anybody?
It's really not geographically limited. Uh-huh. As I say, I have you know, a client in Knoxville. One of the interesting aspects of this, just to finish up on the last question, an interesting, you know, fact is that of all U.S. companies, less than 1% export.
Really? Less than 1%?
That is a surprising fact.
Less than 1%.
But the ones who do it must really be doing it.
Well, and of those companies, 58% export to only one country, and that's predominantly Canada. Now, 95% of the world's population lives outside the U.S.
and Canada.
You know, so you know, go figure. You know, you do the math. There are lots of opportunities, and in China, where there is a lot of wealth being created. The U.S. has ranked number one as far as the number of billionaires in the U.S. for years. China is in number two country for the number of billionaires in country.
You got my interest peaked, I'll tell you what.
China's largest market for Rolls-Royces is no longer, I mean, Rolls-Royce's largest market is not the U.S. any longer. Last year, China became the biggest market for Rolls-Royce. They're building 7 new dealerships there this year and next year. So it's, you know, it's the middle class is growing. They have a lot of disposable income. The savings rate in China is down to about 37% currently from a historical level of 41 or 42%. There's a Wall Street Journal article in February about the fact that the Chinese people were losing their fondness for fakes, that they had the disposable income to buy the real things, and were doing that.
That's a game changer.
It was a status symbol.
Right.
So it's a very different marketplace.
So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more, Bill?
Well, maybe go to our website, which is www.ChinaHKBIZ.com. That's China, C-H-I-N-A-H-K, which stands for Hong Kong, BIZ.com. Or they can reach me at my office phone number, which is 770-396-6016. And we'll be happy to talk with folks. One of the things that we do is we will talk with people, figure out what it is they're trying to accomplish, and we will quote a fixed fee for getting them their answers so they know up front what the cost is going to be. And then if they want to move forward because of our background, we can help them with the implementation, the logistics of, you know, opening an office if that's the case. But we'll be there to follow with them through the process.
Good stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us. And again, I think this is one of those situations where it makes sense to have him come back sometime. Have you come back with a client and get you know, get the real story, get past all this barking. Would you be up for that sometime?
Oh, I'd love to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. How about hanging with us while we visit with our next guest?
Glad to do it.
So, Lee, the undercard. We're done with the undercard.
This is the headliner.
This is the headliner, the one we've all been waiting for. Of course, we met him at a rock concert to begin with.
That's right. So he's used to this.
So you got all the skinny on him, though. So who are we talking to?
We got Mike Mogul, and he is with Crisp Media Group. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we met you at the TechCrunch. You guys were the official media company there, is that right?
Yes, yes. We sponsored the TechCrunch Atlanta event. We did a similar event about a year ago at the launch conference in San Francisco. So being the first TechCrunch event in Atlanta, this was a great opportunity for us to come on board.
Now, you guys did video, you did photography, pretty much everything. But you weren't responsible for the loud music.
No, we did not book the DJ or the live band.
Yes, we tried to end that, but we were unsuccessful, and you too. So how was that event for you? Did you like it?
It was great. You know, I'm often apprehensive about a lot of types of, a lot of networking events or a lot of startup conference events, just because oftentimes it's a lot of people talking, but not many people listening. And this event was a little bit different. I mean, there were a lot of great companies there from Network Solutions to CodeGuard and several others. So for us, it was a great experience, and hopefully, we have another TechCrunch event in Atlanta soon.
You think so? Because that was the first time they were here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Crisp Media Group, what do you primarily just do video and photography, or do you do other services as well?
Yes. So we are focused primarily on corporate video production. We do video production for a lot of small businesses, but also larger brands like Verizon, Coca-Cola, the W Hotels, Audi, and so on. But we actually focus specifically on corporate video.
Now, are you doing these kind of conference and events like that, or are you doing kind of the one-on-one interview the executive to get kind of social media content or thought leadership?
In the case of the TechCrunch conference, that was just a great opportunity for us to come on board. I knew that there were going to be a lot of great companies there, and it was a great opportunity for us to really engage our brand with those companies. But typically, we work with businesses more on an individual basis, where we will actually come in, learn about their business, work with them directly. We do conferences from time to time, but again, I mean, the TechCrunch conference was just a great opportunity for us.
But now this isn't just about the formal training video or the formal video brochure. There's all kinds of neat ways to use video these days. Now that we've got the bandwidth, right, you can do a lot of neat stuff with video that just really jacks up your SEO juice and presence. Speak to that a little bit, will you?
Yes, so Fast Company actually recently published an article on how video is really short-form video is really the future of marketing. Video is really the most engaging form of marketing as opposed to, whether it's a website or photography or anything. In terms of SEO, if you have a video on your website, it basically increases the length of time that someone is on a website as they're viewing that video. It helps to engage your users and humanize your brand. So video is actually, if I had to recommend one marketing outlet for whether it's a new company or a seasoned company, it's probably the most engaging form that you can do at this time.
And you're saying that on the radio? FYI.
Well, we do a lot of video with radio as well.
But anymore, it's not like you have to be a professional actor that's got all their lines right and necessarily looking straight into the camera and being, Clark Gable. You can video real-world exchanges, and to your point, you could actually video people having a meaningful conversation on the radio. And there's value in all that kind of stuff these days, right?
Yes.
It's authentic.
People are always looking for a recap of anything like this, so they can literally go back and reference. And in terms of capturing live footage, it's surprisingly that oftentimes comes out better than anything that's rehearsed. Oftentimes we put together storyboards and also do all the copywriting for a lot of the videos that we do. But a lot of the live exchanges, which we had at the TechCrunch conference, came out fantastic.
Now,
when you're attacking a video project like that, is this a generational thing where maybe the younger generation is embracing it a little more because, they grew up with cell phones that have video and they're used to videoing everything and maybe older...
Or maybe good-looking people embrace better, it more. Ugly people gravitate to radio.
Definitely good-looking, thin people like video a lot more than overweight older people. I'll bet money on that. But is that something that it's an easier sell to maybe the startups and the younger companies as opposed to, the Troutman Sanders of the world?
Surprisingly, I would say almost just the opposite. I mean, I'd say any company that's looking for their brand to be engaging would benefit from video. We're working on a project right now with an agricultural company that is very traditional. I mean, if you visited their website, it would look like a 1990s GeoCities page.
Right.
And little would you know that they're $300 million agricultural co-op. So we've spent a lot of time on farms over the past couple of weeks in North Carolina and Florida, and we'll be in Texas next week. But, learning about these businesses from the retailers to the suppliers, whether it's seed or chemicals that they're providing, I mean, these guys are very, very technology focused. They've got GPS and satellite radio in all of their tractors. I mean, just documenting that process has been a great experience.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Trying to picture that.
Those rows have to be straight. And someone's checking on that from their...
From the sky, apparently, from Sputnik or something. So you've got the technical piece of it. This goes well beyond just doing a technically good job of shooting good quality video. It sounds like you have a great deal of council expertise to offer in leveraging it in such a way that it helps people and makes money.
Absolutely, and that's really the goal behind a video. I mean, to have a well-produced, high production value video is one thing, but to have a video that has a return on investment is quite another. So that's something we always focus on, and we work directly with our clients to solve a problem. You know, in Atlanta here, we work with a lot of dental offices and medical offices, working with them and helping them differentiate themselves and humanize their brands so they can stand apart from a lot of their competitors. So that's
a cool idea.
But that's how you differentiate yourself from like a regular video production company, right? You have kind of a marketing angle to what you guys do as well?
Yes. So I have a marketing background as well. Our other company is a kind of a restaurant, bar, nightlife marketing company called ATL Nightlife, and we probably have, I'd say, 90 to 95% of the market share in Atlanta, and we've been doing that over the past 3 years, working with a lot of local businesses. Marketing and video has been the most advantageous to them. So we come on board, and we usually consult with our clients. Oftentimes, they present whatever the problem is, and we'll work with them directly to come up with a solution.
So I wonder if what Allison was describing earlier when we were talking about Venture Atlanta and the law firms, where they'll have these starter packages for the startup companies.
Right.
I wonder if that doesn't have some merit in your world, because if I'm out trying to get capital, maybe having a good video that succinctly describes where we're going, our market, and all that. Have you guys played in that world at all?
We do. We do a lot of stuff like that for businesses that are presenting either at trade shows or other types of conferences. I honestly, if any business is interested in upping their stock or being more attractive to a venture capitalist or an investor, I think not only is putting together an outstanding proposal important, but having a video that someone can watch because they're actually going to watch it. I mean, if you present somebody with a 100-page proposal, chances are they probably may read the first, you know, one or two pages, but a video, especially, you know, whether it's a 2 to 3 or a 3 to 5 minute video, they're going to watch, and they're going to learn more about not just your business, but also about you and the type of person that you are.
Just perfect segue. Last year at our conference, we had a couple of the startups that actually used video instead of just doing PowerPoint. And I'll tell you, so powerful. They were, I mean, CodeGuard was one of them that you mentioned, and you know, he stood out among the rest.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I'm sure happens with video, it happens with us all the time, is the message can be shared without being diluted. You know, you ever try to go home and tell the joke that you heard at the comedy club? But if you've got audio, and certainly it's got to apply to video, you can share that just exponentially, and the message doesn't get diluted. That's got to be incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, we've found that for a lot of the videos that we produce, customers of businesses share them as well. So it's not just something you can put up on your website or market in your business, or whether you use it for TV, but it's something that your clients will share. If they're sharing a positive experience, you know, it's great. I mean, it's we do it in several different types of formats, whether it's mobile friendly, so they can view it on mobile phones, whether it's something they just view online, on TV. I mean, it's cross-format.
So yeah. You're the guy, you're the video that I see every time I play a word in Words with
Word
Friends.
Word Friends, right.
Is that you?
He's the responsible for that. Now, is this super expensive, or is the price kind of gone down now because the technology has kind of improved so much?
So we tailor the budget and the needs really to each individual client that we work with. We can pretty much work with any budget. Honestly, when quite often, really, the budget comes down to their return. I mean, with a lot of the businesses, the video can yield such a high ROI that it really cancels out the cost of the video. So, you know, for some of these companies that are million-dollar companies or even a lot of local businesses, you know, the value that video can bring them in terms of clientele. With a lot of dental offices, they report they sometimes see 20 to 30% increase in customer base in, you know, the 3 to 4 months following us producing a video for them. So it's it definitely has a strong ROI, and I think there's a very high amount of value to it.
Now, when you're working with a medical office, a dental office, are you doing a video, or this is a campaign of videos that happen throughout the year that are rolled out, or how does that relationship work?
It usually depends on the client's preference. Quite often with any type of local business, we usually do an overview. So them explaining their business, us showcasing basically what they do to really just be engaging. With a lot of dental clients and medical clients, we also do testimonials where the customers or people in their office will share their experience, but we'll also show the types of procedures that they offer, any kind of imaging techniques that they do. It could be either one video or a series of videos.
Now, is the length of the video matter? Like, does it, like, are they typically under 2 or 3 minutes? Or are they half an hour?
And they don't have the drill in the background. I can almost assure
that's
you.
That's not the soundtrack. It's the drill noise.
I always recommend to our clients that they keep videos short, typically under 5 minutes. I think what we notice is everybody comes in and they want a 10-minute video, but unless it's a documentary, most people aren't going to tune in longer than 2 minutes or so. They want to get the message
so
quickly.
It's better to have 5 2-minutes than 1 10-minute?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then maybe roll them out every 6 weeks or so, and then you have like kind of a campaign and you're getting the same messaging across rather than 1 10-minute of somebody kind of droning on.
Absolutely. I mean, you can have different videos for different target markets and different audiences. In the case of this agricultural company, they are producing one video for their suppliers, another video for their retailers, another one for their board of directors. So each video can have a different message, and it's better to do it several engaging videos as opposed to one long 10-minute video.
But can you share the elements of each video amongst the different videos so that way there's some economies of scale in the production?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So for me, this is a little bit like the conversation with Bill. Now that we've had this conversation, I've gotten to know you, I've learned a little bit more about your business. I mean, I think you're my video guy. But at the cocktail party, at the family reunion, at the quickie traditional networking thing, you're another video guy. So that's got to be a challenge. Or does it help to eat your own cooking and you use all these things to help you really differentiate consistently out in the marketplace?
A lot of our business does come from referral. One of our competitive advantages, I would say, is our turnaround time. A lot of similar video companies have a 30 to 60-day lead time. We'll produce a video within a 3 to 5 business day turnaround.
Production value. That would be huge to most business people, yeah.
Is top-notch. I mean, with the TechCrunch conference, for example, a lot of people wanted to see that video quickly. TechCrunch wanted that video relatively quick to put on their website. And I believe that conference was on a Monday. We had the video turned around and complete with edits by Friday.
Nice.
Man, so you guys are pretty busy, I would imagine.
We are. But at the same time, we can accommodate a high amount of videos. We do videos not just in Atlanta, but also in other markets. We completed a shoot for Verizon that was in Dallas, Houston, and Miami, as well as Atlanta. So it's we can work pretty much anywhere within the United States.
Do you have crews all over the country, or you have an Atlanta crew that travels?
It depends on the project. We have teams in Los Angeles and in Texas, but oftentimes our Atlanta team will travel. Specifically, if it's a 2 to 3 day shoot, we can be relatively quick with those.
When I was your age, I think I'm a little longer in the tooth than you are. I wasn't anywhere near being the president of anything. Give us a little background. How in the world did you fall into this? I was probably still in the mailroom when I was your age.
So, yes, this is all, I would say, probably by accident. I was a biology major when I went to school.
Oh, that explains everything.
And the original track for me was medical school. So I got in, decided to take a year off, and worked at the Centers for Disease Control here in Atlanta. For a couple of years, I was one of the coordinators for user experience for CDC.gov. So I had a bit of a technical background. And then from there, we started, I was always very interested in media, specifically in digital media. So we started a photography and video company, particularly focused around the hospitality industry with restaurants, a lot of restaurant groups here in Atlanta, like Here to Serve in the W Hotels. And from there, we noticed that a separate portion of our clientele was very corporate. So we formed Chris Media Group, which is separate office, separate team, and it has a very different focus from our other business.
Good stuff. And if somebody wanted to learn more, what is the website?
The website is crispmediagroup.com, C-R-I-S-P, or they can email me, michael@crispmediagroup.com.
And the sweet spot, you mentioned you do a lot of work in the medical field, so dentist's office, doctor's office, specialty medical, that's a sweet spot for you guys?
We do, but we also work with a lot of startups and a lot of local businesses, anyone from the auto industry to even realtors and so on. So we're not limited to any specific industry here in Atlanta.
And any size, is there a sweet spot regarding size that you like to go after?
We can accommodate any project, big or small. It's just as long as it's focused in somewhat of a corporate environment.
Right. All right. Good stuff. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We will see you all next week. Thanks.